You want to make sure that the first level of the appeal is human and emotive. They need to be able to relate. The second or third layers of the appeal can be rational, scientific, logic. There can be lots of stuff below it.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Eve Savoy. Here's three facts I believe you should know about Eve. Number one, he's the former CEO of Heart and Stroke Canada, and that was up to February 2020. Two, recently he's launched a new business as a strategic advisor to charities and philanthropists. That's a multiple syllable word. Philanthropists working with the important organizations, and that includes Big Brothers, Big Sisters Canada, the United Church, Philanthropic Foundations of Canada, and Parkinson Canada. And number three, are you ready for this? He's a pyromaniac. There's nothing he loves more than lighting a fire in one of three fireplaces in his home or in the outside fire pit. Eve Savoy, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. Thank you very much.
And Eve, you've got to be careful when you go introducing yourself at these networking sessions by saying, I'm a pyromaniac. It's turning.
But a safe one.
Good. And I'm curious, when you light the fire outside, do you cook hot dogs over it?
Oh, I cook. I actually more than hot dogs, steaks or, yeah, we're well equipped for that.
Good. I can't wait to join you when we can actually meet in person again. Eve, as the CEO of Heart and Stroke Canada, now that must have been, to say it was an interesting communication challenge would be weak on my part. The messages that you needed to convey, you had different audiences with different mindsets and even culturally different positions where they're hearing you from. How would you define your key audiences? If you were to group them, who were they and what was it that was different about them that you had to be clear in your messaging?
I think the best way to think about the audiences were people who live with cardiovascular disease, typically older, but not exclusively. And then the rest of the population who are at risk of heart disease. And pretty much every Canadian is at risk of heart disease. But often in our 20s and 30s and 40s, we don't think about the salt, the sugar, or maybe the lack of exercise, smoking, all of the things that contribute to. And then when we get to our 50s and we're in the age range where heart disease is more present, then we realize that these things are important. So I think one of the biggest communication challenges, especially with people who are at risk, is about the fact that these communications were about changing behaviors. And that's never easy to do. And in fact, the other audience was our donor public. And again, you want to create awareness of heart disease, of heart and stroke's important work, but you want people to move to action, to go to the website, make a donation, and triggering people to act in a philanthropic way is a whole art, because they're parting with money, but they're getting a good feeling in return often. But they're not buying a new, they're not the grocery store. They're not buying a new gadget. They're doing good. And that requires a special approach in communications.
And doing good, when you're going to donors and you're asking them to do good by contributing money, do you appeal to them with logic or emotion?
You want to make sure that the first level of the appeal is human and emotive. They need to be able to relate. The second or third layers of the appeal can be rational, scientific, logic. There can be lots of stuff below it, but you don't start with that kind of appeal because it leaves people cold. So if you think of images or if you think of video clips, that you have to use things that move people to passion. I think of Joanie Rochette, the Canadian figure skater, who many Canadians will remember lost her mom from a massive heart attack the evening before she skated at an Olympic. You know, her mom was in the audience. And she, Joanie is a student of medicine now, having retired from professional sport. And she was a spokesperson. Well, her story appeals, right? She's just so Canadian in the way that she bravely skated the day after her mom's passing, because that's what her mother would have wanted. And today she's studying medicine. So in a way, she was a fantastic way to carry a message, but to make it emotional and to bring people into the fold and to ready them to hear other messages that are more rational.
Eve, when a spokesperson like that appeals for support for a charity, a cause, does it work when people identify with the spokesperson, or is it about them feeling sorry for the spokesperson? What's the emotions that are involved here?
I think identify more than be sorry. It's actually the slogan that Heart and Stroke used really as the kind of the top of the communication pyramid was a simple one: life, period, we don't want you to miss it. And in that, it is a really fundamental celebration of something that we all value. We value life, we celebrate it, right? And in Heart and Stroke, that meant preventing people from dying suddenly from a major cardiac accident, but also actually improving our lives by eating better or exercising more, or by living well after a stroke or a heart attack. More people are surviving those cardiovascular accidents in better health because of better treatments. So in fact, the message was a really positive one. We actually want you to be able to enjoy your grandchildren or to do the things that you love, whether it's sports or, and it was a very celebratory one. And I actually think, broadly speaking, not only for Heart and Stroke, the best messages for charities are ones that convey a positive spirit, that lift people up.
So the message, the intended message delivered should not, if I hear that right, should not be one of dire warning and, you know, danger, danger. It should be more of hope.
There's no question, actually. And there's actually good evidence that when a charity uses a kind of dire warning, this is a crisis, this is an emergency, what it will do is it'll create a kind of immediate bump in the response to donation appeals, but that bump won't be sustained. And obviously, as in other kinds of businesses, the best donor for Heart and Stroke is someone who's engaged over the long term, who's deeply committed and who's not going to be a one-off. So the reality is you want a message that doesn't get just that bump, but engages them over time.
Now, Eve, I imagine, and I'm simplifying it for myself and perhaps the listeners here, that there are two types of donors. There are the average donor who might donate on a regular basis, perhaps, or maybe they donate when they attend a person's funeral or they hear something, and they donate a reasonable amount, but might be $100, a few hundred dollars, might be in that range. So there's that type of person, and then there's the ones who from time to time donate millions. What's the different mindset, and how do you reach them differently with your message?
Increasingly, actually, the mindset's the same. And donors want to know that they're having a meaningful impact, that they're making a difference. Increasingly, in digital communication and digital tools is a big part of why this is changing. Even small donors are less transactional. They don't give and forget. They want to give and know that there is an impact, that their investment is yielding something. And more donors use investment language to talk about their philanthropic investments. This is obviously true for larger donors. But the other thing that we observe is that more smaller donors, think of heart and stroke, right? Stroke is one thing. It's a cerebrovascular problem in the brain. Heart disease is in our vascular system and in the heart. People who are touched by stroke might want to make their gift to support stroke research, people who were touched by heart disease. So the reality is they not only want to make an impact, but they may actually want a specific way in which that impact is going to yield results. And increasingly, online tools enable small donors to kind of follow the money. And that's really, really, it's where philanthropy is going. And one of the things that was really, really amazing, the largest gifts on an annual basis that Heart and Stroke would receive, as is in common with many other charities, came through people's wills, often millions of dollars. The reality is that we'd look at those gifts and see in the record that the donor had given $75 over 20 years, modest amounts, and there were no signs that there would be a multi-million dollar gift in their will, right? But they were generous and committed over a long period of time. So the real indicator, I think, of people's capacity to give often is engagement over a long period of time.
Engagement over a long period of time suggests that you need to be, or the organization needs to be, constantly, periodically communicating with the audience and communicating in a message that is consistent with what you said last week, last month, last year.
Yes, and to this, you know, one of the when you talk about yielding results, investment yielding results, research doesn't happen in a flash. So one of the real challenges in that story is that people are impatient for results. We see it actually currently in the pandemic, and the pandemic is usually unusual in the speed at which we're going to get results. We're going to get to a vaccine. But in heart disease and stroke, you could talk about some of the significant improvements as having happened over more than a decade sometimes, right? And talking about that success over long periods of time, and also instilling a sense of hope about the victories that are ahead. So those communications enter different kinds of audiences, obviously to audiences that were donating online and consuming information via social media channels, audiences that are consuming information through mail or through personal communications, through video, YouTube channels. So the whole, and in both languages, and often translated into other languages other than French and English. So the communication challenges across the country, and also to make that personal, to make it context specific. A story in Vancouver or in Calgary might have reflected advances that were made by researchers in those major research center, you know, and one in Halifax could be different than the one in Montreal. A really complex communication challenges, no doubt.
Eve, you mentioned talking about future victories. And it's a long term. And when it's a long term, we people get tired. Hey, we're still slugging and we haven't seen anything. Have there been some victories along the way that you've celebrated and they were welcome messages for your audience?
Well, I'll talk of two of them that are enormously powerful and personal for me because I have high blood pressure.
Me too.
By the way, 50% of people age 55 plus have high blood pressure. High blood pressure in of itself is easily managed. Good diet, reductions in salt, exercise, possibly medication. But it's really critically important because high blood pressure, if it is not controlled, can lead to heart attacks, to strokes, to small strokes that are invisible, to mini strokes where you don't feel the consequences of that, but that will eventually have an impact on your cognitive capacity and will lead to vascular dementia. So high blood pressure is kind of the entry pathway for this cascade. And if it's not controlled, it's a major problem. So for people in our age generation, an important call to make sure that you're on top of your high blood pressure and you get it treated. The other story for me that is very powerful is my mom spent 6 years paralyzed as a result of major strokes. And the reality is that she might not have been paralyzed if she had reached proper care in a timely way. Because we now know, and there have been huge advances in this field, Canadians have led globally from Calgary. Dr. Michael Hill at the University of Calgary is a global champion. You know, stroke is essentially a clot of blood that lodges itself in the brain and impairs the flow of blood to the brain and can lead to permanent damage. If that's detected quickly enough, we can remove that clot. And there are now two ways to do that. There's the Drano approach, meaning the using a drug that will bust the clot.
Not
or
real,
there's
not real
the
Drano.
Surgical approach.
People don't drink Drano.
Don't drink Drano. It's called TPA actually. But these advances are huge, and they mean that even people who have severe strokes, who get to the hospital in time. So one of the things that heart stroke does is it creates awareness of the signs of stroke. So the signs of stroke is one area is with a heart stroke would really create awareness. And it's I think maybe a good opportunity to share them. Slurred speech, an inability to raise your arms, and droopy face. So any of those signs should lead anyone in their company right away to call 911. Don't attempt to drive someone with the signs of stroke to the local hospital, because if you call the ambulance, they'll actually bring you to the right hospital where they can do the stroke care. And the ambulance will get you there quicker. And heart stroke has pressed hard so that when those ambulances arrive in hospital, there are bypasses in place. So you go directly to the stroke unit. Because timely attention is really important to take that clot out. So this is the kind of advances. In 15 years, the burden of stroke has been significantly reduced. And it's highly, highly relevant for all Canadians.
You mentioned all Canadians. And as many people realize, we have French Canada and English Canada. How big a challenge was it getting the message to both French and English? And was it just a matter of translating what the wonderful prose someone had written? Did that work?
No. Translation is important. I'm a Francophone and from New Brunswick, and I work obviously in both languages all the time. I actually think it's really important, especially in marketing messages to think of translation and adaptation. So Joanie Rachette is a good example. Even in things as simple as choosing a spokesperson, you need to make sure that that spokesperson resonates in both languages, or to have two of them, one in English and one in French. So if you think, for instance, of someone, another spokesperson for heart and stroke from time to time, Peter Mansbridge, who's well known to many Canadians, and we sometimes forget that he's well known to people who listen to English news. And he's a good example, even though he has a good command of French, that wouldn't have the same appeal. Olympians are really, Céline Dion, obviously, would cut across. But you also have to go a step deeper than that in using humor, in using images of iconic places. Make sure that your iconic places are not always downtown Toronto if you're communicating to a national audience. And those kinds of sensitivities are what I would describe as a good approach to not only translation, but to adaptation.
Eve, what in your time as the CEO of Heart and Stroke Canada, what was one of your most difficult challenges?
I think the most difficult challenge is on the revenue side. The reality is that in Canada, fewer Canadians are filing a donation receipt when they file their taxes. And it's been declining for 30 years, quite precipitously. So that means that the fundraising game is more competitive. Happily, those who file, the average amount has been increasing over that same period. But you have to hone your game better, and it's a more competitive field. So that, there's no doubt, was the most difficult challenge. The greatest opportunity, I think, comes from the digital transformation that is, you know, changing so many businesses. You think of e-commerce, and you think of web tools, and the reality, if you think about it, is someone who made a small gift of $75 to Heart and Stroke, if they sent the check by mail, that cost us $5 to process that check. If they went online, use the URL to make that gift and accepted to make the gift on a monthly basis or on a recurrent basis, that just improved the net available in a huge way. So the reality is that all of these online tools were changing the game in a big way and pushing costs out of the business, to leave more money for research, for policy work, for the important work that Heart and Stroke does.
Eve, these days you retired from the Heart and Stroke Canada, and now you have your own business. You offer a strategic advice to philanthropists, and if people need help, you're the guy that they should talk to. If someone wants to explore opportunities to find out how they might serve their community better, maybe as a board member or on a charity, and if they have questions about philanthropy, you're the one who can provide them with advice on what's right for them.
Yeah, think about it in maybe a young athlete who's become really successful, who wants to use their celebrity to do good, but might actually want to explore, what way should I do that? Should I have a focus? Should I engage others? Or think about a couple who are 70 years old and they sell their business, and there's a big tax consequence to the sale of the business, but there's also the fruit of the sale of the business, right? Maybe many tens of millions of dollars. They've always been generous, but all of a sudden they have more significant means and they want to dedicate the next decade of their life to doing a lot of good. They may, that kind of opportunity is one that I'm well suited to, but I work on the other side of the fence as well with charities. that are looking at questions that relate to strategy, to governance, to relationships between different organizations within the same family. So Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Canada, more than 100 organizations, or the United Church of Canada. So the digital forces that are at play, these are the kinds of questions where I provide advice, and I'm having lots of fun.
My guest today has been Yves Savoie. He's a specialist in philanthropy. He can help you. He can help you as a donor. He can help you as a volunteer. He can advise you as a charity. And we leave you with this final message. Remember, life, we don't want you to miss it.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.